Powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Black Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from the Drew Estate Studios in California, it's episode 156 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we welcome Santana Diaz of Pure Aroma Cigars to the Primetime Show. And as always, the Primetime Show is sponsored by Saga Cigars. De Los Reyes Cigars introduces another chapter of the Saga Celez. Celez is a Spanish word that means leisure after work. In the spirit of the standing ideal of owning your own journey and making your own saga, the Saga Celez is the perfect companion to enrich those moments of choice, making them truly yours. Saga Celez carries a blend of Criollo Olor and Piloto Cubano wrapped in a selected Ecuador Shade Claro wrapper that generously delivers with elegance a surprisingly rich and balanced smoke. It's available in three sizes at an affordable price. Be sure to ask your retailer for Saga Celez. And by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary Blend has continuously earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary Blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers, a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selection Vintage, the Perdomo Double Aged 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Miami Cigar & Company, Nestor Miranda said it best, there's a mystery and depth to Africa that captivates my spirit, always drawing me to come back. This cigar, Don Lino Africa, captures the way going there makes me feel. Cigar making is an art form, but in the moment when the cigar becomes art itself, you have something special. Don Lino Africa returns from Miami Cigar & Company. The blend you remember blended even more masterfully this time in partnership with Tabacalera A.J. Fernandez. It's an exotic and complex blend meant to mesmerize. Available in $5 pesos, Don Lino Africa returns. Ask for it at your local retailer. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Estate app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on, Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. It's available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming for the Primetime Network of shows is sponsored exclusively by Drew Estate, as well as the Primetime California Studios. Welcome, everybody. This is Primetime episode 156. Today is Thursday, September 17th. This is Will. September 17th?
Yes, you're good.
Yes, I got it right. I got it right. I had to double check. It's September 17th. It's Will Cooper. I am in the Perdomo Cigar Studios, the Palacio Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Black Stage here in North Carolina. I'm joined cross country by my friend and colleague in the Drew Estate Studios on the Year of the Rat Stage, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How are you doing tonight, Will?
It's been a little bit of a rough couple of days. My back went out, I think I was telling you. And the Phillies just blew another lead. It could be better. It could be better. I can say that. But it could be worse, too. It's pretty good here. We'll be talking about, I know, wildfires a little later. But we had, like, the remnants of a hurricane kind of come through here today.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of rain is what we got. And I'll just say this, kind of growing up in New York, you know, you got 2 inches of rain. It's you can live with it. Right.
Yeah.
But down here, it's not unusual to get 8 inches of rain coming down. So I know people in the Southeast are very used to that, but that's kind of something that's much newer to me. And I don't live in lucky we don't have any flooding that's been reported, but Charlotte doesn't have rivers, but we have creeks.
Mm-hmm.
And these creeks, I think, are going to be interesting to see what happens the next couple of days if the creeks start to swell up right now. That's where – but I don't live in a flood zone, thank goodness, which is really good. I don't have a basement, which is really good as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Good.
But otherwise, really good, yeah. So why don't we turn it over and introduce our special guest today, making his Primetime Show debut. Longtime friend of ours, longtime supporter of ours on Cigar Coop and Developing Palates, the one and only Santana Diaz of Pure Aroma Cigars. Santana, welcome to Prime Time.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Thank you for having me.
getting a little feedback there. Was that you or was that us?
Feedback, like a sound?
Yeah, like clicking we got.
Yeah, I think it's okay.
Okay, okay. Great. Okay, I just want to make sure. But, oh, Santana, great to have you tonight. Are you in, I guess, headquarters, your office right now, right?
This is my office. This is a section that I created like a year ago. I used to be upstairs, so now we, you know, have an office down here.
Yeah.
All right. But we store all the cigars, and we used to age a lot of the first years. Now we age in north of England and Selection 512 and the 560 made in the Dominican Republic.
That's great. Great. That's great. I haven't been to your place, but I've heard very good things about this warehouse. Everyone's like who's gone there said really good things about it.
Yeah, Eric from Dojo.
Yeah, that's who went there.
Jordan once, twice, actually.
Yeah. So,
it's a 50 by 40 by 14 high cigar humidor. It's all cedar roof. I mean, you know, ceilings, walls. It has a couple of systems of humidity. And the AC is constantly at 70, so everything is controlled, you know, to the notch.
Nice.
That's great. So I know you did turn your air conditioning down. So if it does get too hot, turn it on. I don't want you to suffocate either.
I installed, you know, a new administrator in this office here. So I'm going to throw it off as soon as it gets, you know, hot.
Okay, great. Great. But a pleasure to have you, Santana. We always like to start the show, and we'll get into some of your background, and of course, we're going to talk a lot about your latest line, Lords of England. But we always like to talk about what was your first experience like smoking a cigar? You know, before you got in the industry, what was your kind of, how did you get introduced to a cigar, and what was that first experience like?
Well, I think it was my father. I grew up in a family home, a household. It was four of us, me, my sister, father, and mother. And for some reason, my father always had a cloud of smoke all over the house. Back in Cuba, people used to smoke everywhere. And my father was a very heavy smoker. So I grew up in this environment, smelling these aromas constantly. At the age of 14, I believe I started smoking cigarettes. Black tobacco, you know, brand, no filter. And from time to time, I used to puff my father's cigars. My first experience was with a Dahlia from A98 Paragas. That was my first smoke.
Very nice.
A big step up from one of our other people's first cigar is.
Yeah, we hear some stuff, some stories, and that's probably one of the better ones, that for sure. So that's a hell of a way to start, I was going to say.
Well, that was my father's favorites. Before the revolution, my father used to smoke Marevas from Bausa. Bausa was a brand that was made in Cuba. Only, never was exported, was only national. For Cubans to smoke. And that, you know, that's the kind of size he always smoked. The Marevas is a 42. The Dahlia from Paragas is a 43. So he always had, you know, these cigars in his humidor at the house. So, you know, that was my first smoke. I was smoking cigarettes, very dark black tobacco. So when I got this Dahlia, it was normal. You know, it was different. You know, you don't get that paper sensation, you know, it was a different experience for real.
Yeah. You know, the times I tried cigarettes, and there were a few, I've tried filtered and unfiltered, and neither did it for me. And it was like, you're right. It was just like, I mean, I tried maybe two or three, and that was it. I just couldn't do it after that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, my father, before the revolution, he never touched a cigarette, you know, in his life. After the revolution, I believe by 63 or 64, Tabacalera Cubana, SA, got into a real trouble. Production levels went down, everything was disorganized. The cigar making was horrible due to the national association of the country. And he stopped smoking cigars because they were bitter, not well made, you know, a lot of Thai cigars. So he told me, I stopped smoking cigars, you know, in 63, 65, because they were really bad. So he got into cigarettes. But he always had some, you know, stash in his humidor. Not stuff that he was able to buy. Once cigars became exports only. But he, you know, he had a couple of friends in different factories that he used to get his couple of bombs of Lanceros, his Marevas. So he smoked those at night. You know, when he was starting to remember, he was smoking those at night.
Constantly. Yeah.
But he was a heavy smoker, smoking all day.
It's like my dad. My dad's 75 and he smokes like a chimney, the guy. So when did you come over to the US
from Cuba? In 95. I actually went from Cuba to Sweden in Europe, and from there I came here to the US.
What led you to Sweden?
You know, that was the way that I was able to escape. When I was 15, I tried to escape in a draft. I got caught, you know, I was 15. They put me in prison for 10 days and they had to let me go because I was a minor.
Oh, wow.
So I said, well, you know, my next venture is going to be, you know, I'm going to keep trying until I succeed. So I was able to buy a little invitation to Sweden from a Swedish guy. And I bought my ticket 6 months later. I fled to Sweden. That was the only way. It was between Cuba and Sweden, there was no visa. You don't need a visa to travel.
Okay. Okay. How long were you in Sweden for?
About 19 months, almost 2 years.
Were you in Stockholm?
Yes.
I love Stockholm. I went there 2 years ago, probably this weekend, I think, or next weekend. It's like 2 years and I went there. I really loved it there.
Yeah, it's completely different. It's you know, the Swedish people are very calm. You know, they calculate everything. Everything is super organized, clean. I learn a lot from these people.
Yeah, it was hard for me to smoke. By, you know, because it was 2 years ago. It was hard to smoke in places there, but there were a lot of cigar smokers. I did see a lot of people smoking cigars. It was just hard that you don't smoke in a lot of shops there. There's very few places you can smoke. So it was still nice where people could smoke outdoors and things like that.
Yeah, it's mostly in and out stores you have.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was there, a pack of Marlboro was about 40 crowns. That's about $7 to $8. This is 95. In the U.S. was about $1 something.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
On alcohol, the Swedish government is on top of that, and they close the liquor stores about 6 p.m.
Yep.
You know, yeah. They're very strict when it comes to that.
Yeah, that's true. And then eventually you made your way over to the U.S. Did you go right to Miami from that point?
Yeah, after they denied my citizenship there for different reasons. They decided that I was not a political refugee, and they signed my letter of deportation. And I'm not coming back to Cuba. You know, I died before I go back to Cuba.
Right.
So yeah, I bought a fake passport, and I was on my way to Miami.
There you go. And you've, like I said, since you've been here, I mean, I know you've always been very proud to be an American. I mean, you've used that theme in a lot of your lines, you know, in Decrossier. So, you know, it's certainly, you definitely have an, I feel you have an affinity for this company, which country, which is great.
It is. This country opened arms for a lot of Cubans. Our community here in Miami, this is our haven. Thanks God, you know, we have what we have here in Miami. And yeah.
Yep. So before you got into the cigar business, were you doing anything else?
Yeah, I had a trucking company.
That's right, yep.
I had a trucking company. I started driving in 98. I was a driver. A year later, I bought my own truck. 2 years later, I had a fleet. Yeah, that was my business.
Oh, wow. So were you like, were you going cross country a lot of times, and like when you were trucking, or was it more local? How were you doing that?
All 48 states.
Oh, wow.
I know this country more than my own country, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, there's some interesting driving you could do in this country for sure. So what kind of led you at some point? I mean, you've obviously had you liked cigars. What kind of said, I want to get into the cigar business?
Passing cigars in Cuba. You know, we had a situation in Cuba where you all know that there was no private property, or you know, wouldn't be able to do any businesses. So, you know, we started like kind of cigar making, an underground cigar making. You know, that led me to make some money for me to be able to go. So when I left Cuba, I said this was a time in my life where, it was not going to come back. But in 2004, 5, I believe, my father called me from Havana. And told me, hey, listen, I have a guy in Costa Rica. He's a good friend of the family. And if you want to get into if you want to get into this business again, let me know. So I called him, and so he can call you and contact you. Said that I'm doing great with this trucking business. You know, this is not something that I did, something that I love. I know that it was rough. It was a rough time. It was an illegal business. I don't know. So I hang up and say, I forgot about that. Somehow, my mind started getting into those days.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, you know what? Let me call this guy. So I called Jose, and we spoke over the phone. And then, I'm telling him, listen, I'm going to open a company. Okay, I'm gonna get my importation permit. I'm gonna research on this cigar business in the US. And I'll call you back when all is done. 3 months later, I called him back. I said, listen, the company is open. I'm still waiting for the importation permit. But let me visit you to see what you have. So I did. He was working in his house. It was about 8 to 9 pairs, making cigars for some European customers. And I liked what I saw. I was off of the business, so I had to come back to seek all these knowledge that I had. And when I got back, then, sometimes later, I got my importation permit. And the rest was, history.
Very good. And your first brand was De Crossier, correct?
Yeah, De Crossier. Yeah.
So how does a Cuban guy get the De Crossier name? How does that kind of all fit in?
That's the name of my father. I mean, De Crossier is the last name of my father.
Okay.
It's a family name. He got that name, last name from his mom. And it was a family of French people that immigrated into Cuba sometimes around the 1800s. The first who came from France, and I don't remember the date, but his name was Félix Crozier. That was my great-great-great-grandfather. And that led me to Francisco Crozier, which was my father's grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And, my father, he started telling me the stories about his family. My grandma told him all the stories. And my grandfather was a tobacco grower. He was a cigar fanatic. Remember the story when Francisco passed away? He passed away of tuberculosis. And he died with his cigars in his hand, burning the cheeks. That was very impressive. So, I never thought about putting a cigar brand under my name. My father was everything to me.
you know, I remember when we were just talking about this before the show started, you and I met. I was down in Miami with a friend of mine, and we got invited over to Eric Espinoza's place. And I think you popped in there that day. I had heard of DeCrossi. I had never smoked a cigar. You kind of showed me your cigars. You gave me a cigar, I remember. Wow, that's a great memory. Yes, it was. It was. I remember, and you were saying it's 60. I said, no, I like 60. That's a great memory. You gave that to me. It was a fantastic cigar. And then you were telling me a lot about the brand, right? And the cigar was unique. And then you were showing me some of your packaging and stuff. It seems like when you were doing things, you still do things, I think, a very set way in terms of your blends are very unique. And the packaging you do is top notch, is what you've done like throughout all the time I've known you. Were those some goals that you had when you were creating the DeCrossi brand?
Well, back in Cuba, I worked for the cigar making, I mean, the box factory in Havana. You know, I worked there for 6 months and I quit. I opened my own shop, so we were making some packagings. We started making some humidors. So, you know, I have my background in cigar box making back from Cuba. I don't know. I mean, I have my style. I don't know how the designs come to my mind, but it's a unique way of packing cigars. And the packaging for me is super important. You know, how the cigars age and sear are completely different. You know, it's a unique process what happens when you put a cigar in nature without cellophane in the cigar box. You know, so.
You also, you're very particular about aging these cigars too. That's a thing I've noticed throughout what you've done is aging has been a very important component to what you do.
Yeah, aging is everything. You gotta age cigars. You know, if you don't age them, you're not gonna get the results, you know, that at least what I'm looking for in a cigar. The way it tastes, how clean it is, flavors. So important, I mean, aging is everything. And every blend has its time. And you gotta give them that time if you wanna have a great cigar.
There's even been you also use very unique cello at times.
Yeah.
Where the cellophane would have perforations in it so that there would be some maybe more air exchange into the cigar through the cello.
Yeah, the breathable cellophane came later. I used to pack the cigars without cellophane.
Mm-hmm.
But we got into distribution with Espinosa. We were selling more cigars in more stores. And that idea of putting cigars in cellophane with barcodes was demanded from many stores. And some reason that idea came into my mind. I said, how did I find a solution so I can continue using my cigar boxes and aging my cigars in this type of cylinders? So, you know, I don't know where the idea came from, but I invented a machine and started punching the cigars. Well, at the beginning, we punch them by hands in Costa Rica. We need the slots, you know. In a vertical way, with a couple of slots, with a selection by 12. And I gave, you know, the hand punch to Jose, and he took it to the factory, and we did a selection by 12 with this technique, and it worked. You know, the cedar gets to the cigar, and the cigar's going to breathe.
Right.
And that was the hold. And that was it. From that moment on, everything I do is on punch elephant, unless and the Los Opinion, we have a lot of printing material inside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Ink, believe it or not, you know, take some orders to the cigar. So you have to
right.
keep them in cellophane and do not punch them, otherwise it's going to taste like ink.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, I understand that too. And here is that kid. I don't know if folks could see the perforation. I'm going to try to show.
Yeah, that was a critical one. We didn't have the machine back then.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a 512 Lancero, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Yeah. So, yeah, that was, and I always liked that too, because again, I kind of, you know, I'm always a guy who likes to keep the cellophane on. You know, and I know it's not necessarily the most popular thing, but it does protect cigars when I keep things long term, and that's just a great way. It kind of lets it breathe in the humidor, which is great.
Yeah, if you keep them, I mean, if you keep the cigars in the different cigars in the humidor, you know, you may want to keep them.
Yep.
Then pair with each other.
So you built up a very nice following over the years. You know, the brand became very popular. I know. I started talking to the Dojo guys. You got a cigar of the year out of the Dojo guys. The brand was going really well. You set up a distribution agreement with Eric Espinoza. Then there was kind of a period where you went through some transitions. The first thing was you and Eric went separate ways. But it seemed like it was a very amicable thing from everything I've talked to you and him about. But what went into that decision to kind of split the distribution agreement from Espinoza?
It was, unfortunately, it was a sad decision that I had to make. And to be honest with you, Eric, you know, he did a fantastic job. We're still good friends. It wasn't his fault, it was my fault. And, you know, the communication between me and the factory stopped. And to be honest with you, I don't want to open that book.
Sure.
As it is, I don't have any descendants or anything like that, but it was some moments for me. You know, we just lost across the edge at that moment. So, and there it was in the middle of it. It was not fair for him to get all these phone calls, back orders, you know. So it was a really sad time. You know, that's all I see.
Sure, sure. I mean, so, and you mentioned, obviously, so it was right around that time, too, when you left Costa Rica. And that's when you started going, that's when you went over to the Dominican Republic after that. The kind of, and that's how I saw it was kind of a restart you did for DeCrossier at that point.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to Havan, you know, the Maragoros, Matias Maragoro, Alberto Calderon, we were friends from before. We were talking to make some cigars before, but I never made my decision of going to make a cigar with them. So I was working with a factory. So, you know, I mean, at that time, something happened in the family. It was a really sad time for me.
Nope, we understand.
So, I mean, we didn't have the Crozier anymore. So, we took a couple of years to, I was traveling a lot to the Maragoros. You know, for me, these people are family. And I took my time working with them when then we created the 512 over there and the 560. We still have some pending projects to do. But it was a time of, you can't make good cigars in a set.
Right. And I noticed you didn't try to recreate what you did in Costa Rica. You kind of worked with that factory with the strains, and that's a good factory. That, you know, they make that the Villiger cigars made out of there. You know, some really good Villigers that are coming out of that factory. You know, the Floridian Clan is a favorite of ours, especially Aaron. So I mean, so you have some different tobaccos you're able to work with, and you kind of work with the resources you had there, correct?
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, it's two different countries, two different factories. Even though you have almost the same tobaccos, it's not going to be the same.
Right.
It's not the same. The way tobacco age in the mountains of Costa Rica is not the same way tobacco age in Santo Domingo. Even the same tobaccos, believe it or not. I know that sounds crazy, but that's just the way it is. And one component that you don't have, the blend comes different.
Really?
Honestly, I didn't want to perpetrate the 512, the way we had it in Costa Rica. That
sure.
That was a different time and a different deal. It was a collaboration between me and my ex-partner. We blended together. So that's you know, in the back of my mind, even though I know the blend, because I blended it with him, I made a decision that blend's gonna stay there. You know, and all the blends that we did back then, until today, even though I get the same tobaccos working in the same country, they're gonna stay in that factory. I create new blends. You know, better or similar, so okay, but will not be the same. That's some kind of, you know, it's morality. It's morality in the business that I think you just have to be ethical, you know.
What sure.
Past stays in the past. You know, it's not a good ethical decision to bring something that you do with someone in partnership, in harmony, and bring it into a new factory and do the same thing. You know, it's a knowledge that belongs to that factory, and this knowledge is going to be in a new factory with a new blend, with a new technique, with a new rolling system. However, the factory works. You have to adapt to the factory that you go to work with.
Right. No, that makes sense too. And I think, like I said, I think you were always very transparent about that, that, hey, you know, you've gone to this new factory, you're creating new blends there. And I've respected that, you know, a lot, because I think that's an ethical way to do it too. I you know, to say, you know, if you just kind of didn't say you were switching factories, people would know right away. It's not the, you know, it's not going to be the same. And so, yeah.
It's impossible to replicate something like that.
Yeah.
Even if you have the same tobacco, it's almost impossible.
Yeah. But you mentioned that that sometimes just aging the same tobaccos in Costa Rica versus Santo Domingo, they're different. Is that just because of the climate and the geography?
Climate and the factory.
Okay.
Each of those bales, the organic material, you know, the genetics that goes there, all those molecules staying there for years in that. That aging room that you have, your bales, is going to be for that particular factory. Every factory has its own smell. Don't you notice when you go to a factory, the smell's different than the other? You know, even though some tobaccos are the same, the factory smells different. Every factory smells different.
It does, yeah.
And tobacco is all about that. It's a hydroponic plant. It absorbs everything around you. So Costa Rica is in the middle of the forest. You know, we have a lot of vegetation. At night, the humidity is great. So, yeah, that's the difference between, you know.
Yep.
I mean, when you go to Nicaragua, you go to Esteli and you smoke cigars, and let's say a Nick store factory. And then you come to Miami and they taste a little bit different, you know?
I've had that happen. I've had it happen in all, probably every country. The one that I remember the most was I was in the Dominican Republic and we were smoking Cohiba Red Dots at the General Factory, and they were smoking like totally different than like what we had. And then we took some back and they seemed different once they came back again. You know, something seemed to happen. It was like a bunch of us were noting that. We were just, you know, so we kind of saw, and I know Eric's talked about this with me too, that they just, there's something that happens when these things transport too, that you can't control.
Can't control. It don't have to do with humidity. Remember, when you pump a cigar that you inhale, you're getting all this oxygen go through the channels. You know, and that makes a difference.
Oh, I agree. So if
you take it to that magnitude, if you have that kind of palate to notice these type of changes, some people don't get that.
Yep. No, I totally understand that. So you worked on starting to reset the Crassier, and then this other project comes along last year, which I want to talk a lot about, and that's Lords of England, where you've kind of taken this old brand and brought it back. So let's turn our attention there. What kind of got your interest in Lords of England as a brand?
Well, I saw Lords of England, I believe it was around 2008. I got a multimedia in my hands. A friend of mine gave it to me. I didn't even know who made this multimedia. Multimedia is a CD. It's It was made in 1995. Okay, it's a box of a paper box with a CD inside with a lot of data of brands and factories and everything about Cuba. And I got this multimedia in my hand and I started going through it. And I saw the Monte Carlo cigar, all the Cuban brands, Carvajal, all these brands. And then the Lords of England was in front of my screen. When I saw it, this is what I saw. Let me show you what I saw, because now I have the original of what I saw.
Okay.
Here it is. And if you can see it there.
Oh, wow.
That's the original Lords of England Papeleta from 1920.
Oh, wow.
You can see the back of it. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has the glue and everything here. So this is the first thing I saw. When I saw it, it got my attention. The House of the Lords, okay, talking about whatever, who knows, and the artwork, you know, this golden emblem of England. And I saw it, I liked it, and I forget about it. Then it was like a calling, you know, it was like, you know, I was working on the Crozier and I had it there. I didn't even register the brand. So then Nelson Alfonso is a good friend of mine. I don't know if you guys know him.
The guy from
Karate.
Yeah.
We were talking about this multimedia because he was the actor of the multimedia. He was the one who made it.
Hmm.
I found out that later. When he told me, I was the one who made that multimedia. I said, really? And then we started, you know, speaking about a lot of things. And he said, Santana, you know what? I have all the originals that you're gonna need. And he's the one who gave me this original, of course. He's a collector as well.
Right.
So he gave me this. And then he gave me the Bofeton, the original Bofeton.
Hold it.
Yeah.
Wait, say something just so it could go on the screen. Like, hold it back up against Santana. Yeah. And just say something when it comes up.
And yeah, this is the original Bofeton that goes in. I mean, people who doesn't know what the Bofeton is, it goes inside the box like this.
Okay.
And then he gave me the Vista. If you see it, that's the Vista. That's the original Vista from 1920s. So I say, well, this is a calling. I mean, this brand is calling me, you know? And I still didn't register the brand. You're working on the Crozier. And then one day I get to my computer and I go to eBay and I input Lords of England boxes. I was looking for a box. And this is what I found. I found a box of Lords of England imported in 1907. You can see the name inside. This is a Lord of England by E&E. I'm going to explain what E&E means later.
Okay.
With the 1916 warranty seal. So then the next day, I registered Lord of England, the brand. I went and it was available. It was abandoned by Tatties, so I took it.
So it wasn't a difficult process to get that at that point?
I don't know. Cost me $175.
Oh, wow.
It was nothing. I registered it myself. So that, you know, that's how Lords of England got to Pure Roma, you know. Then it was there for a while. In 2016, it was still there. Then I got the band. Also, I got the original band. From that moment on, the research started, you know. I was investigating on this brand that you can't imagine. Everything. It's really hard because it's not a lot of stuff up there in the internet about the Lords of England. Nowadays, I have a lot of information, but back then it was.
Even when I was reviewing it and I was doing some of the background, most of the background I got from what you had come up with, that you had sent us, there wasn't a lot out there on the internet. I mean, you could find some of the pictures and stuff, but that was pretty much it.
That was pretty much it, yeah. I believe Hop Wheel made a review on a figurado size. from the $50 count that he got from some guy in Switzerland. It was a trade that Brooks did. And, you know, when I saw that, I said, wow, look at his review. And then he, you know,
he's into that. Brooks is into those, like, really old brands. I can tell you that.
They documented some information, and it led me to find more information. So, you know, this brand has been on my investigation for many, many years.
Yep.
It was like a passion for me to look into, you know, the stuff of my country that I didn't even knew back then. And I have a lot of information and general knowledge of how the Cuban industry, tobacco industry, worked back then, from 1974 to the 19, until the revolution. Mm-hmm. So that's how it came about. That's how it was discovered. And that's how it was developed into my mind.
You in a brand, a little background on the brand. It was a brand that was made in Cuba and was originally sold in Europe, and then it eventually made its way to the U.S., correct?
Yeah, this brand, this Lords of England brand, was created by an illustrated figure in the cigar industry back in the day. His name was Gustavo Bach. You probably heard about the Bach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, we don't know if he was the one who made it. All we know that he was the one who purchased the Henry Clay factory and mm-hmm. became the Henry Clay and Bach Corporation Limited. And I have proof here in a bulletin from Cuba. It was an industrial bulletin of commerce of 1907 saying that the other thing that was owned by Henry Clay. So June 17th, 1907. So it's real. So it was registered by the main logo. The main logo in the brand, in another type of box, the name of the metal was Gustavo Bach.
Right. So you did a variation of that.
So we know that he was somehow involved in the process, and we know also that the brand was distributed in England, because that Henry Clay and Bach Corporation then was acquired by an English trust that was formed under Bach. So he was probably, probably demanding some development for their country, and that's how the Lord of England got to Europe. Mm-hmm. The English backing that they were getting. So we know after that this brand, with the McKinley tax, the tax center for McKinley, rose the tariff in tobacco in the thousands. ATC, which is the American Tobacco Company, took the brand to New Jersey and many other brands. So this brand was also made in New Jersey, and it was distributed in New England, Chicago, many clubs, many hotels, and it was a staple in the U.S. market back in the 1920s, right after Gustavo Bach passed away.
Yeah, they made a lot of cigars in Trenton, which I used to live not far from there, and I didn't realize how many cigars they used to make in Trenton, New Jersey.
I'm still researching where the factory was. I can't find it.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you where it is either. I just know that they did a lot of that, yeah.
I can't find any trace of where the factory was. I know that it was American Tobacco Company factory, because I believe it was in 1902, James Buckham, Buchanan Duke was the owner of American Tobacco Company. Mm-hmm. The biggest cigarette factories in the U.S. Then he went to Cuba, and then he created the Havana Trust with Gustavo. And they finally purchased the English trust as well. So that's how this brand goes into the American Tobacco Company, because they purchased the English trust.
Right. And it was still a Cuban tobacco they were using with this. It was still Cuban.
Yeah, when it moved to New Jersey, I believe it was 90%.
Okay.
Virginia wrapper, some Connecticut Virginia wrapper, with the Cuban feeling.
Okay.
Because that's the way they used to do it. Remember, the I mean, it was heavy on tax. You know, taxation was really, really heavy.
Oh, wow. So the brand itself, it eventually went dormant. Was that because of the embargo?
Cuba discontinued a lot of brands. You know, a lot. I mean, when the nationalization of the country, of Castro, there's a lot of brands that got discontinued. I believe they reorganized the industry and selected a few brands to be exporting goods, you know, brands into old customers. Mm-hmm. And the Lords of England got discontinued. It was not even in the books anymore. You know, nobody knew about this brand.
Yeah, because like I said, I hadn't heard of it until it had come back, and then it kind of piqued my interest a lot too, as you were announcing this. So you have the trademark, and then the next step is now you want to go create a cigar to represent that brand. So what was that process like in terms of what was some of the steps you did that you wanted? What were you looking for with this cigar to be?
Well, before we spoke to Nick Perdomo, I was working on replicating the same exact artwork. I mean, we went down almost 90% of the replication of the original artworks that I had. Not with the intention of making it yet, I said to myself, I'm gonna start working on this project. This is not an easy thing to do. You have to vectorize everything. You have to separate what you're gonna embose, what you're gonna, it's a huge development, okay? And nothing, you know, I'm in a board meeting with my associates. This is 2018 sometime, yeah, 2018, yeah. And we were discussing if we have a new brand other than Crozier to do. And I said, well, I have something that I've been working on for quite a while now. The artwork is almost 9% in. And if you guys want, we can bring this back. You know, I have years of this investigation on this brand. I pretty much know everything about this brand. And we can market it. It's a beautiful name. And it sounds super good. One of my associates said, okay, how do you feel if Perdomo makes it? And I said, what? I said, yes, how do you feel about that? I said, fantastic. Nick Perdomo, are you kidding me? Yes, why not? So next thing you know, next day we're in a car on the way to Nick Perdomo's headquarters. Perdomo Cigars in Miami. And Nick was there, Arthur Kemper, Mr. Cuba, Jenny, his wife, and Nicholas, his son. And we sat down at a big table. You've probably been there.
Yep.
Conference room.
That big conference room, yep.
And I never knew Nick before. I met him once in 2011 in Republic. It was the Newmans made a convention in Ripaki. To Republican thing. I don't even remember. And we met there, and we never spoke. So I never, met Nick in my life. Like talking to him. And the thing, he started talking, we asked him, can you do this brand for our company? And he said, sure, let's try what it is, And then, we started developing this brand with Arthur. It took us about 6 months to develop. It was a lot of back and forth of, are we going to replicate it? Or are we going to create a new thing? So I finally, we finally concluded that, let's not reproduce something that was made. Let's create something out of it. And, if you can see the artwork, it's completely different. See, we took some of the elements of the original artworks and incorporated.
Yeah.
In the way Perdomo made his developments.
Yeah, that's some of the shelf talking. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, for me, it was a great experience. When you work in harmony with good people, good things happen. Yeah, I mean, from every point of view. But, can you say something?
No, go ahead. You can go ahead.
I'm not the best speaker in the house, okay?
You're fine. You're doing fine. You're doing fine.
So when you work with great people, good things happen, you know? Actor took about probably 3 or 4 months in the daily, you know, me going there and working with him. A lot of arguments, believe it or not. That is fantastic. Actor is to me, is a prince. The prince of everything. That guy is a genius. Very passionate, you know, very honest, outspoken. I like that about him.
Yep.
And then Nick too. Nick is a great guy. You know, I mean, you can't deny that he's an enlightenment. That's the way I see it. You know, he's always advising me and stuff. And he was putting his opinion on this. Nicholas, the whole family got involved. We all got involved into this. It was deeply difficult to finalize this process, okay? Especially with me, I'm super picky about everything. And for the first time in my life, I was very tolerant. Tolerance grows in me. I didn't want this packaging. I want my cedar boxes, I want this. And I want
right,
that.
Right, right.
And Arthur came to me and said, Santana, listen, we have an organization that is, it works like you can't imagine. You gotta go to our factory to understand it. So I went, and when I get back, I said, yes, you know, I agree. And this organism, it works so fast and so, you know, how can I say it? So exact. Of every move these people make in their production is unique. Everything is perfect. Everything is clean. So the packaging department is what it is. They're not gonna buy a pack of seal, you know, from Brazil to make my boxes. So I understood that. So I say, okay, let's do it. You know, let's do it your way. Let's do it the normal way. Let's see what happens. I like it. I love it, you know, but I wanted more. So, and that's how it came about, you know, and I love it.
Yeah, Nick doesn't take on a lot of contract brands. I mean, he's very particular about that. So there was something he must have been very intrigued with this project to take it on.
I mean, I think that Nick Perdomo is a industry figure, you know, guy's been this for 30 years. He built everything from scratch, working hard, sacrificing a lot of stuff in his life to be able to make it to this point. And you're right, he doesn't get involved with this stuff, development at all.
No, he doesn't. I mean, I was on the factory tour as well, and there's only a few contract brands that I saw there when I was there. And you're right. That's an amazing, I tell people that's a one of a kind factory tour when you go on that thing.
It is. For some reason, he said yes. I mean,
yeah.
I like him a lot. I don't know if he likes me the same way, but, you know, I mean, our communication is great. You know, we get along pretty well, and that's a big factor.
Yeah. What did you have any reservations, not maybe about Perdomo, but, you know, you've made cigars in Costa Rica and the Dominican, but you really hadn't made anything in Nicaragua. Was that something that maybe, did you have some reservations or, you know, that's just something different for you? Or was that, you know, hey, I'm going to give it a try because I know I'm working with Perdomo.
I'll be honest. I have a lot of friends in Nicaragua, you know, and I've been in Esteli many, many, many times. And I visited a lot of factories there. I never thought about working in Nicaragua before. You know, and it never came across my mind. Like I said, this whole development is something that it came out with an idea, and it grew into a great brand.
Yeah. And you opted when you created this. You did a Connecticut and a Maduro.
Yeah, initially we were going to make a Connecticut only. Hold on, let me get some water. Okay.
Go ahead. Take your time. Well. Go ahead. Yeah. So while Santana's going, yeah, I'm getting updated on the Phillies blowing another.
Workman
game.
Stepped in and he just gave up a leadoff bomb to
Nimmo.
Oh,
come on! You're right about him, Aaron. Why is he? Oh, this is gonna end. This is not gonna be good. It's not over though, right? So we still could come up and get it. But it's 7-6 the Mets right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I mean he gave up a hit to Conforto right after that, but then he got an out. So.
Yeah, no. That's, oh, geez. This is just you can always count on Philly to lift your spirits. Thanks. Thank you, Aaron.
No problem.
Oh, it's just painful right now to be a Phillies fan as we head into the final 2 weeks of the season right now. Oh, geez. It just never ends right now. And the worst thing is if the Phillies don't make the playoffs and Gabe Kapler makes the playoffs, I'm never gonna hear the end of it.
Just wait.
I'm counting on Kapler blowing this in the last 2 weeks. Oh my goodness, come on guys. And then just stay tuned on that right now. Yeah, but I guess we still have we still can come up.
Yeah.
But the Mets are still batting right now, is what I'm saying right now.
Yeah.
So. What a terrible thing to be baseball fan.
Okay, I'm back.
All right, good. All right. So we were just talking about the blends, and you started saying that you originally were going to go to Connecticut.
Yeah, the original idea was to get three sizes. I mean, you guys understand how difficult it was for this company to do something with us because the FDA.
Yeah.
The FDA was right in the middle of everything. And, the substantial approval in the process. So, believe it or not, it was a great gesture that until whatever happens, if the FDA is heads or not, I'd be forever grateful to this family for giving me six sizes, not only three, six sizes in two plants. You know, that means a lot to me. It's always going to mean a lot to me. The Connecticut was the development. I said, no, I need more. I need 48 inches on the shells. You know, I don't do anything with half or 20 inches. I need more exposure.
Which is something that Nick will talk about that companies need. He'll talk about that. That's how important it is.
Yeah, Nick said, yeah, you're right. 48 inches is what you need. Otherwise, you're going to get lost.
Yeah.
So in stores, especially with, this type of artwork, it is gorgeous. So, from Connecticut, we're going to Maduro, and in the process of creating the artworks, Arthur always tells me, Santana, the cigars are the least rewards. That was his words constantly, because I was constantly, imposing less blend, and he's like, you don't have to worry about that. That is, it's easy. That's easy. That's the easy part of it. I didn't believe it, but it was. It was Nick, him, and Mr. Cuba. They presented a few blends, and it was so easy that I choose one. And I said, this is it. In both of them, in the Maduro and the Connecticut. Nick's tobaccos are incredible, okay? If you go to the factory and you see the barrel inventory, on and on and on, so you can choose by years, okay, what kind of bitzer you want, what kind of header you want, all that type of stuff. So all I make some recommendations, and this is what I want, guys. I want something that is sweet, number one. I want something that burns, doesn't go off because it has too much header in it. I don't want something super strong. I want something medium, mild or medium, flavorful, healthy profiles, but the sweetness have to be there. That's what I said.
Right.
So Nick is a genius in what he does. So he probably read my mind and presented the right blend, and it was extremely easy, like I have to say. It was a cliche. When I smoked that Robusto, which is my favorite Connecticut, and I said, I inhaled that stuff, I said, this is my heaven. This is what I want. How long am I going to age it? I asked. He said, you don't have to worry about that. You're going to age for 6 months. Beautiful. That's what I mean. 6 months. Okay, and you know, that was it.
Very good, very good. Aaron, I'm sorry, were you saying something or was that
nope,
just
you're good.
Okay, good. I didn't want to. So yeah, so you got the cigars are now out on the market right now. How are they doing?
They're doing great. Ooh. I'm waiting for my second shipment.
Nice.
That's great news.
Second batch is coming, you know, it's going into storms right now.
Yeah. How would you describe the Maduro cigar? I mean, we're gonna talk about the Connecticut in a second. Aaron and I will talk about what we're smoking, but how would you describe the Maduro cigar to folks?
The Maduro is a good cigar, but it's not my favorite. Okay, the Connecticut blend is my favorite,
right?
For sure. You know, it's a Mexican San Andres. It's not a strong Maduro. It's a mild medium. I would say to me, it's mild medium. Some people, it's a medium. It's not a full body stick. Cigar, you can get the. I mean, it's earthy, has a sweetness to it. It burns beautifully. You know, it's price point is right, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I mean, I think it's underpriced, but you know, that's the way we discussed it, and that's how we agree on. That's the price. It's $7 for the Robusto. It's $7.50 for the 50x6, which is the Toro, and the Chocho is $8. You know, I mean, the best in the Maduro for me is the Chocho. You know, I mean, for some reason, smokes a lot better than the Robusto and the Toro. Mm-hmm. The best size for me on the Connecticut is the Robusto. My favorite. You know, people have different opinions, but that's fine. You know, that's the way I see it.
Understood. Now. What are the plans for the brand going forward? Any plans maybe to expand the brand?
Right now, we're on that.
Okay.
You know, we need to accessorize this brand. You know, accessorize means, you know, we need to get some accessories around them. We need to get into more stores. We need to get into a lot of stuff. This is a baby right now. You carrying this baby, you know, it's just the beginning of something. Let's see how far it goes. I have high hopes on it.
Yeah, I mean, it does take a while to you know, resurrect a brand to a point where it's, you know, where, you know, to build a brand up, it takes a long time. You could get the cigar, it's great, but building the brand up takes much longer there.
I mean, right now is what I call the testing period, which is the first batch going out to some stores, and those stores are reordering. The first batch came, you know, I mean, it's being consumed by the same stores. We're not opening new accounts due to me not traveling, you know, different factors, okay? We don't have any sales reps. We don't have anything. It's just me on the phone or going someplace that I can reach, okay? I can probably not go to New York, but I can go to the Miami stores or West Palm Beach, you know. But the accounts we have, they have 8 this batch. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah.
You have like, you know, one store can eat 14, 15 boxes in 2 months. That's not bad. You know?
Yep.
Not too bad.
So that's very
good. So
yeah.
Testing period is done. I mean, we'll see what we can do.
Well, no, I think you're off to a good start with it, Santana. We're going to give you some feedback towards the end on our smoking experience with it. So that's great news. Aaron, anything else on Lords of England we want to hit?
I don't think so. I think you hit it all.
Okay. Santana, anything else we want to mention on Lords of England that we may have left out?
It's work. You see the Nicaragua word right under?
Yeah.
That was Mr. Kemper's idea, and he nailed it.
Nice.
So the font, you got the font. Like, that font has a very old-school feel to it with that font.
Yeah, the Lords of England, we vectorized it from the original. For the Nicaragua award, we did that font. That is a main font to be similar to the vintage font.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Arthur Kemper, you mentioned him. I know he's a stickler to detail. This banner behind me is like a second iteration. He wasn't happy with the first one, and there were like subtle changes he wanted on that second banner. So he said, throw the other banner out. I'm sending you a new one. And when I looked at it, they looked identical, and I had to call him up. I'm like, did they send me the right one? And then he started looking. He said, hey, I was on the phone and showing him, and he's like, here are the differences. It was amazing.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
I can see what you're saying with that. You know, Santana, you mentioned you had some real, like, there's a lot of like classics that you've had. I know you don't have them anymore, but what were some of your favorites in that classic line? Like, I could tell you that original Golden Blend is probably the best cigar that I've had from you. I remember we had that in Florida. I mentioned the Lancero. That was just a great – I'm not a Lancero guy, great Lancero. Talk a little about, like, some of those classic blends right now that you've done.
Golden Blend was an idea of, you know, I mean, the name came from the wrapper. We got these Gorgeous, which is the golden – I mean, the first Golden Blend, the Golden Blend 7. The wrapper was gorgeous. It was golden to me. It was so pink, reddish, brown. It was a Colorado Claro, and the blend. The tobacco was, I didn't even talk about that, but it said the tobacco was crazy good.
Yeah.
So I came out with that name, saying, you know, this is a golden blend. The name is golden, so it's a golden blend. So later on, I said, you know what? Let's make this golden blend a series of some rare stuff that we have in that factory, and let's create a scenario with the golden blend continues, you know, in that category.
Yeah.
Attention to the construction, the packaging, all the bands, everything was serious on that golden blend. And it was a series of three blends, the golden blend 7, the golden blend 10 years. What was the other one? Golden blend 7, 10 years. And the original one was those three of them. That was, you know, the concept behind the golden blend is to make everything so unique and so perfect, and the aging minimum 1 year. And we didn't break that rule. I guarantee you, I age it myself. the other line was the 512, those cans.
Oh yeah, I still have my cans upstairs.
Four ring gauges, you know, the Coloniales and the 46 Corona Gorda and the 48 Hermoso. I selected the sizes and we blend based on that. And the idea of putting in cans, that was from, you know, my partner Jose. He came up with that idea. We laminated that with cedar inside, and the blend was, to me, the Corona Gorda was one of the best blends in that series.
I love that one, yeah. I love that one as well. And then, you know, another favorite of mine was the Laforte. When you those you want to talk about aging some cigars, they would age great.
Yeah, La Forte. Believe it or not, I put a Viso and a Ligero. They were very thick on that blend. The Robusto was a bomb. We had to age those cigars for 24 months to mellow down. You know, the original idea of that brand was to make 2,000 boxes every year, number the boxes on the bottom, and four sizes with a Costa Rican wrapper that, you know, Jose was growing in Costa Rica. And the packaging was gorgeous, you know. We used a cedar that was super aged for the first batch. And we have to, like a piano box, like 8 layers on top of it to be able to cover these solid woods. And, you know, the aging on that box, where we have that box, keeping it, and put cigars in there. But that cedar was very, very unique. And the bullet on Laforte was my favorite.
Yeah. That was the size I liked as well.
50 every engaged by
5 1/8. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. That was one of my personal favorites that, like I said, and they just aged out. Like, if you still got some of them, they're a real treat, is what I'll tell people.
I have a few boxes of everything. I always do to see how they go in 8 years, in 10 years.
Yep.
I have cigars there from 2007.
Oh, I bet.
When you come, I'll give you one. Okay?
Yeah. And then, you know, we were mentioning when I met you, that was at Trabuco. That was part of the Diplomacy Series. That was another one that.
The Trabuco was a part of the Diplomacy Series. It was also four sizes.
Yeah.
And ring gauge Trabuco with a pigtail on the bottom. That was an invention. Jose's customer, or he invented that, to cover, to twist the foot with the wrapper. I disagree with that. Like, you can't imagine, because the aging process that it takes so long, it takes super long because it's a closed foot. But it worked,
Yeah, it definitely did there, as far as that goes. It was a great
start. Two memories there.
Two
memories we have.
Absolutely. Speaking of memories, we were just talking about this before the show. You had there was the humidor that you had at the beach club. That was just an awesome humidor. Like, you go in there, they had this beach club, and you go in there, and they had this DeCrossier humidor, and you had all your stuff there. It was great. You said that they closed down since then, right?
Yeah, it's closed down. They're going to demolish it, and they're going to rebuild a new development. But it goes up to $120 million. It's going to be gorgeous.
Oh, really?
It's going to be a residential hotel. So they're going to have residents buying apartments. And there's going to be room for, applying as a hotel. It'll be like mini mall in the bottom. A lot of stores like Gucci and all these high-end stuff is going to go on the bottom. But about 4 or 5 floors. And they have helicopter standings. It's going to be a great development.
Yeah, it was a really neat place. I mean, you had to kind of drive over this little bridge to get to it. And there was a guard there and everything. And... It was the Grove Isle, right? That was the name of the place. Palmero's Beach Club, right?
Grove Isle.
Yeah, it was great. And you go in the humidor, right? And there's this big oil painting of Santana. It's a beautiful oil painting. Except, who did that painting for you? Was that custom done?
Yeah, it was custom done.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it's a good assembly. You have to put your foot behind it.
All right. Aaron, anything else on Santana? I got one last question for him otherwise.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Santana, this is and then we'll finish up what we're doing, what we're smoking. So Santana, this is our cattle baron steak question, as in, eating meat steak. And I want to know what your favorite type of steak is.
Ribeye, Black Angus, bone.
There you go. I'm in. I knew you and I think well alike. Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. So let's get it. Let's wrap up with what we're smoking tonight. And as always, that's sponsored by Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter. And now just outside the Charlotte Motor Speedway in Concord, North Carolina, Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. So Aaron and I are both smoking the Lords of England cigar. Aaron, you're smoking the Churchill. I'll have you go first.
Yeah, so this is the number three is the Vitola name, right? The Churchill, right? This is a nice cigar, and it's interesting the way that the flavors kind of hit you, because on, like, when you initially draw on it, I think you get a lot of the wrapper from it first. So you get some of that kind of like hay, kind of grassiness with some sweetness there at the very start. And then as the kind of the smoke goes across your palate, you start getting some of the, I think, the filler with the kind of some deeper wood notes, a little bit of black pepper in there. So it kind of finishes a little bit fuller than it starts. So it really allows you to kind of get a taste for some of the different tobaccos in the blend. And the construction is impeccable. I mean, the burn is razor sharp. Draw is perfect. And in the Churchill size, you got a really long smoking time. I'm halfway through the cigar, and we're an hour and 20 minutes into the show. So it's definitely good value, I think, for the money as well. So it's a well done cigar, Santana.
Yeah. Yeah, Santana, I can agree with you, Aaron, on about everything on that. I get a little Aaron nailed it with some at the beginning of that cigar. You get that wrapper, and he mentioned some of the wood notes of the black pepper. I get a little bit of cedar in there as well. A slight creaminess to it. What I kind of really liked with is it really felt like an old-school cigar to me. So you hear that expression, grandfather's Connecticut. This is kind of what I would expect. But when you sit down and smoke this thing, there's a lot of nuances with this cigar. It's not just a very straightforward cigar. It's got some complexity. It does some transitions with it. And I'm smoking the number two Toro. And like I said, it's not gonna be very heavy at all. It's a cigar you could smoke any time of the day, which I think is great. So, because I like a Connecticut sometimes at night, and you know, it's got great flavor with this. So I think you nailed the blend, but I also think you kind of brought back an old school vibe with this cigar, Santana, that I think makes it, you know, a lot of people are trying to reinvent Connecticut. This is straightforward, and it's really good. So this is really good work. You did a great job with this.
Yeah, with it. You know, I put it as a weed because it's
yeah, no, absolutely. The Perdomo, and it's not like a Perdomo cigar either. That's the other
thing. It doesn't taste like any Perdomo cigar.
It doesn't taste like any Perdomo, yeah.
Not at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I get that a lot. Yep.
Yeah, so that's great.
But it was a combination of many things together. And like I said, when you blend or develop or do anything in harmony and happiness, you know, great things happen. I mean, that's
yeah.
When you're sad everything's bad. You know, it's just the group of people that I partnership to do this brand are fantastic. You know, the same with the Matagoros in the American Republic. These guys are family as well. We're going to get some stuff out in the future that are going to be a lot better. But yeah. Wherever I go, it has to be like that. If it's not harmony in the ambience, I'm out. The moment that stuff getting stuck, getting, you know, you have, I mean, when you do this kind of work, I mean, in the meanwhile, you're working in all works, you have to separate your mind from the dollar. That's rule number one. You got to get profits and dollars out of your mind, and then you work in art. You know, that's my recommendation for any new guys who come into this business. Because when you're developing brands, separate your mind from the dollar and concentrate on your brands and your artworks and the company of your brands. But that's just going to make the difference.
That's great. That's great. Aaron, anything else we have?
I think we're set.
All right, Santana, we want to thank you very, very much for being on the Primetime Show. It's great to great to have you on the show. I know it's been a while, and you did great tonight, by the way. You say you're not the best speaker. You did fantastic. you know, thank you again for the support you've given us over the years.
Yes.
Really, your support's been great. And we're continuing to love to work with you, basically.
Thank you. Mr. Cooper, as always, it's a pleasure. You're an asset to this industry. Keep doing what you're doing. This number that you do what you're doing. With Aaron, I like you because the way you are, you're unique.
Thank you.
most people give Aaron the hate mail.
Yeah.
All right. Santana, you take care and have a great night.
Thank you.
All right. That is the one and only Santana Diaz of Pure Aroma Cigars. And what we'll do is we will now dive into a word from our sponsors. JRE Tobacco, the authentic Corojo leaf, is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Jamestown Valley in Honduras, Julio Arroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds. And in 2000, he successfully reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the JRE Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with JRE Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Aladino is a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andres Maduro, Ecuadorian Connecticut Shade, Habano, or Cameroon wrapper, representing the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for Jerry Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. And by Toscano Cigars, as rustic and as strong as the people who smoke them, try Toscano's rustic and full-bodied flavors and aromas. Made in Italy with 100% dark fire-cured tobacco from the United States and Italy, is one of the best-selling cigars in the world. Toscano cigars are the perfect combination of American and Italian craftsmanship. Whether in the traditional long format or the short format Toscanella, Toscano cigars are dry-cured, handmade, and fire-cured for your enjoyment anytime, anywhere. Visit your local premium cigar retailer today and look for Toscano cigars today. And by A.J. Fernandez Cigars. A.J. Fernandez's New World is named in the honor of discovery of tobacco by Christopher Columbus's expedition in 1492. Fernandez collaborated with his father, Ishmael, on a cigar which is comprised of a wrapper from Nicaragua that covers binder from the Jalapa Valley and a filler blend of Ometepe, Condega, and Esteli tobaccos. The core line debuted in 2014, and it was followed by New World Connecticut, New World Puerto Especial, and New World Cameroon. All four blends are able to captivate the palate of any cigar smoker. If you're beginning to discover the world of fine premium handmade cigars, New World Connecticut's for you. If you're into rich full body blend, Puerto Especial's for you. And if you're into the complex flavors, the New World Cameroon is for you. Finally, if you're into the robust and earthy flavors with notes of espresso, the New World Oscuro is definitely for you. Visit www.ajfcigars.com to learn more. And by M. Bombay Cigars. M. Bombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M. Bombay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try M. Bombay, Gaia, M. Cuba, and the Esteli line. M. Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And finally, by Alec Bradley Cigars. You ever plunk down hard-earned cash for a cigar? You're hoping that you just bought yourself a nice drive to Taste Town, only to discover you're in a slow lane with a clunker? That sucks. Say goodbye to bad rides. Test drive an Alec Bradley cigar today. At Alec Bradley, they get it. Whether we're talking about life or cigars, it's all about the ride. Learn more at alecbradley.com. So we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment, of course, sponsored by Alec Bradley. This game is a final now. The Mets have beaten the Phillies 10-6. And if you're hearing beeping, it's probably Hector.
It is Hector.
It is Hector. Yeah. Thank you, Hector. Thank you, Hector, very much. We appreciate that. That's all I can say. By the way, I guess I want to welcome all the basketball fans from Miami back. Following basketball again. Welcome back. Big win for the Heat there. And finally, we would like to thank the New York Islanders for their participation in the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs as they were eliminated by the Tampa Bay Lightning. So there you go. It's Tampa Bay and Dallas in the Stanley Cup final. And I know you could care less about hockey. I think it's going to be a great matchup. So, all right. Aaron, just before we kind of get into this, a little audible here. I know we're going to probably do some sort of a baseball show down the road, but what is your – just a little thought, I guess, on this whole – it looks like the baseball players are going to 16 games. Kind of interested in your thoughts on that.
I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out this year, I guess, and get a feel for it.
That's kind of what I'm saying too.
I mean, it was nice when they expanded it last time. I think it kind of added a little bit of complexity to it. So that it may do the same again, but when you get so many teams involved, I think it just kind of waters it down a little bit.
These early round games are dangerous, though.
Yeah.
That's two out of three. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do it. Is it going to be first game on the road for the higher team and then two games at home? That's a bad – if they do it like that, I don't know how they're going to do it otherwise unless they go back and forth twice.
I wouldn't think they'd go back and forth twice, especially in – you know, this year with
exactly
the, you know, health issues and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I mean, that used to be a big argument with the baseball playoffs years ago because the team with the better record used to play the first two games on the road. Mm-hmm. And they actually could come in going at home into an elimination game and with the best of five, and people didn't like that. So,
right.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting. What's the second round? Is it, it's best of five, right?
I believe so.
So, yeah, it's going to be – so the thing I think where you're going to start to see this get criticized is if you get a team like the Phillies who sneak in maybe with a 29-31 record and they get deep into the playoffs, then you're going to have a below 500 team possibly playing in deep into the playoffs right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not – as much as it may help the Phillies the next couple of years, I'm not really loving it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens there. But I guess the A's right now are they're in the three spot, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So yeah, you know, the question is, does the Yankees bounce back? So I guess we'll see.
Yep.
Yep. So Aaron, I wanted to talk about the wildfires a bit for this segment. Because I don't know much about like these wildfires are not something we've seen to the extent in my area, like in your area. This is a big thing that's going on there right now. I mean, I saw the pictures of like the red skies and stuff.
Yeah.
Is it just dryness that you guys have out there? Why these fires are so like problematic? Like it seems like more and more they're becoming problematic.
Yeah, I mean, in the summertime it gets very dry on the west, and when we talk, I'm talking on the west. I'm looking at, you know, you could pretty much include kind of anything from like Colorado west, I would say,
right,
and the entire, you know, from north to south at that point, everything west. But right. Yeah, it just gets really dry during the summertime. There's, you know, and I know a lot of people like to think that, you know, California is just completely covered in homes and things like that. And it's just, you know, there's lots of open space in California and in these other states. So, it's just dry grass. There's lots of forests and stuff as well. You have to deal with various things. You can have lightning strikes. You can have, you know, power lines that kind of spark these things up. And then you have humans, which always throw a wrench into things that can, you know, people aren't as smart as they should be about, you know, fireworks. You know, I know people love to shoot off their fireworks and they complain about fireworks being illegal in lots of places, but, there's a lot of good reasons for doing that because, you know, a firework that is in the wrong direction can set off one of these fires very quickly. And it happens every year, multiple times. And,
wow.
They can get out of control like they are now. You know, you get in a open area and, you get a little bit of wind and it moves quick. And you'll see, you know, you can see it all up and down the West Coast, Arizona, Colorado, all over the place. These fires just pick up and, it's really hard for the firefighters to contain them. You know, you have to work on creating fire lines. They have jets that are dropping retardant all over the place, trying to kind of limit what's happening and things like that. But once they get going, it's really hard to stop.
Yeah, that was my next question. Why can't the firefighters just spray it out? Is it just because some of these are in locations that are difficult?
Yeah, these are in locations where there's no fire hydrants, really. You know, right. So you got tank trucks and things like that, or you got helicopters that are, you know, scooping up buckets of water out of, you know, reservoirs, lakes, whatever it is, to try to dump on it. And then you have large jets that have been repurposed to carry lots of retardant to drop on those fires or in, you know, around the fire to try to help it from, to keep it from spreading. So, yeah, it's not, they can't just run a hose out there and put these things out many times. So, it's really, working on creating, you know, fire breaks and stuff like that to try to, you know, contain the area that it can go, but it can jump it very easily based on the wind and the conditions.
I remember, there was a round of fires, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. And it went into residential. That was when, why am I drawing a blank on his name?
Brian Chinook?
Brian Chinook, yeah, of Chinook Cellars. Yep. He had his house actually destroyed from one of them, right?
He saved his house.
That's right, he saved the house, yeah.
Yep. That's and right. I saw Brian in Napa the day of or day before that occurred. He had to kind of sneak through the lines that the police had set up for people to get back to their homes because right. He wanted to go there to be at his house to try to do what he could to save it. And he was able to save the house, which right. was nice.
But can they do anything like where these forest lines end that can stop the fire? Like, can they trench it or something like that?
All it takes is an ember to blow across, you know, 50 feet, 100 feet, whatever it is, and it keeps going. You know, up where Brian is, it's a lot of vineyards and open space and stuff like that. So, and you have homes kind of mixed in through that. And, yeah, there's it's unfortunate, but yeah, it gets into residential areas, and it can, you know, once a couple houses catch, that keeps spreading like that, and it's a bad time.
Have you ever been in a situation where it's been dangerously close to where you live?
No. You know, where we're at, there is open space, but it's mostly residential. So we've never really been in a spot where the fires have creeped, you know, dangerously close to us. Most of these fires are north of us, and I live right on a river. Mm-hmm. So there's a fairly large gap between it, but it's never even reached, you know, kind of the other end of the other side of the river. So it's not gotten down that low. But I'd say, you know, there were some fires that this year that are happening, probably I'd say maybe 30 miles north of where I'm at.
Okay.
Some large fires, things like that. So it hasn't been the fire, but the smoke has been pretty intense. You know, you're talking about the red skies and stuff like that. Yeah, that was, we had that here. You know, you couldn't see the sky. The smoke was so thick, it was just blocking out everything. The sky was just orange. And outside of those days, the smoke was still really thick. It was just really gray. You know, still couldn't see the sky, anything like that. Luckily, yesterday and today, it's been clear. So there's been, you know, enough wind to kind of move things around and stuff like that. But, you know, the fires are still going. They're still working to try to get them fully contained.
What causes the red skies? Is it just the light, like, reflecting on the smoke that's causing that?
I think so. You know, because the sun is trying to get through. There's, you know, there can be days where there's no clouds, but the smoke is so thick that you just can't really get anything else in. So, yeah, you just get kind of sunlight, you know, trying to get through, but you just have it, you know, kind of bouncing off all of the ash particles that are in the sky. And just really kind of it's a weird kind of feeling seeing that kind of a look outside, you know, almost like you're on Mars kind of.
I actually commented on trips with that. I'm like, it looked like the Martian sky when he put that picture.
Exactly like that.
And
yeah.
he's up in Portland area, which is,
They're getting that. They're still struggling with it a lot. I mean, you know that the games that were slated to play in Seattle, they've had to come down to San Francisco. They're going to have to go down to San Diego. Luckily the sky's supposed to clear up some. So I think they should be able to go back up at the beginning of next week. But part of it is you're just at the mercy of the direction of the wind as well. So it's kind of how that plays out.
Does it get to a point where, I mean, I know this year it's completely different with COVID, but do they start canceling schools? I mean, when did it affect like jobs going into work and schools? Did it ever get to that point?
Not really. Just you kind of shelter in place kind of a thing where you need to be inside. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll tell you to, like, you know, try to block any gaps, like in the doors and windows and things like that, to try to prevent smoke from getting into the houses or the businesses and things like that. So, I think unless you're in real, like, actual danger of the fire being there, there's no evacuations or anything like that.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. Yeah. Like I said, it's kind of something I don't, like, you know, it's a world I don't know about with that. I've just not, you know, I've actually been in an earthquake. I've been in a tornado. I actually haven't been in an eye of a hurricane. So I've actually experienced both, but I've never experienced a wildfire thing. So it's kind of something that's a completely different animal to me.
Yeah, it's, in California we get, you know, fires and earthquakes. So it's not really things that you can, like, really, you don't get a bit of a warning. I mean, fires a little bit, you can kind of get a feel for, you know, how fast it's moving and things like that. But it's not really things you can plan for too well.
Yeah, I was in the DC earthquake, and it was the only earthquake I've ever experienced. And I knew something was up. And I turned, and I was with a guy who was from the West Coast, actually. We were doing a meeting. It was a meeting of us and a business partner and a customer. And he was from the West Coast. And I just turned to him. I said, and he says, yes, it's an earthquake. He knew I was going to ask him right away. He's like, we have to get out of here because it was a chemical company we were in. So we had to get out of there right away.
Definitely.
And then there was damage. Like this had structural damage, this earthquake. It was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, because they're not really, you know, they don't have, I don't think, a strict protocols in regards to building for earthquake, you know, resistance and stuff like that. So.
No, and it was just outside D.C. in Maryland. We were very close to the epicenter of that thing.
Yeah.
So I did experience, and I had a tornado. We had a tornado hit when I lived in New Jersey. We had damage, and that's another weird thing you'll see.
Right.
But as far as – it's weird because as far as hurricanes go, I've never had hurricane impacts even in – because I'm far west. When I lived in New York, you don't really get hurricane. You get the rains, basically. Sometimes you get a little wind. But so I've not, like, experienced the eye of a hurricane where I've had to board up like people in Miami there.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought it was kind of an interesting topic because, like, I didn't know much about it. So, well, I figured we hit it and tell our audience about it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to hit on that? Or we can get into the last segment there.
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. So let's do the last round of things from our sponsors. Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saca set out to create Puro Son Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saca's co-CEO values and attests in three simple words everything Saca wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saca, they are a way of life. Ask for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Moisture de Saca, Todos Los Dias, and Sin Compromiso, your local tobacconist. And by La Aurora Cigars, in the heart of Santiago, Dominican Republic, on the rolling floor at La Aurora Cigar Factory is a section reserved only for the elite, the best of the best. These elite cigar rollers work for over 10 years to simply get the opportunity to make a historic cigar. Those cigars are the La Aurora Preferidos, featuring six different wrappers in a beautifully packaged perfecto shape. La Aurora Preferidos have been the preferred cigar of the Leon family for 115-plus years. Take part in a legendary tradition that started the Dominican cigar industry. Look to the lion. La Aurora Cigars, we are Dominican defined. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Company. Founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations at 124 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting many of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old-plus factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District of Tampa, Florida. At this factory, known as El Rojo, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand and hand-operated antique cigar machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua, and it's a brick house. Polo de Mar, El Baton, Quorum, and Yagua cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tobacco La A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With its longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans have founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And by Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has five generations of experience of cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders at a Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family has brought their very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Tired of Casa Cuevas Connecticut, the Casa Cuevas Habano, Casa Cuevas Maduro, as well as the Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas Cigars. Casa Cuevas Cigars, from our casa to yours. And finally, by Adventura Cigars. Adventura the Explorer is the first creation by Marcel Noble and Henderson Ventura. Immediately after lighting up the Explorer, the Mexican wrapper will delight the aficionado with its dark chocolate flavor. After a while and pleasure, the Dominican filler will flatter the aficionado's palate with wonderful spicy and leather aromas and unite it with the wooden sweetness from Ecuador. Try Adventura the Explorer and explore the wonderful experience. So welcome back. Aaron, I kind of put this one together tonight, and I was I'm trying to come up with some different things tonight for the deliberation segment, right? And this is kind of one I think we may have explored this one years ago on Stogie Geeks, right? But I put a new one together. And this is kind of like what I call practices by retailers. Some of these retailers may have members' lounges with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm calling them practices. I'm not necessarily saying they are best practices. Sure. And I was going to do 10. I came up with 9. So I think but some of these are multifaceted. And, you know, I see a lot of retailers, they get into certain patterns and they do things, whether it's coming to events or promotions. And I kind of want to just debate some of these and see what we think, if they're good or bad right now.
Sure.
All right. The first one I hit right off the bat is pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about a pipe store. Okay. I'm talking about a place that's primarily a cigar place
right.
that wants to get into pipes.
Right.
Right. And I see cigar places do this. They have pipe nights and maybe mm-hmm. they'll try to push a pipe at a cigar shop. What are your opinions on that?
I think if there's a good kind of pipe community in the area, it's a good thing to do. Especially if the shop is looking to kind of get into that area, you know, it can bring people that might not normally go to that location into there. And if they like the ambiance of the location, and maybe it's something that they'll visit a little bit more. Yeah, I think if there's a good community for it, and you can, you're not like putting off the cigar smokers that are your normal clientele, then it would be good to do it.
I've seen this happen at several stores in Charlotte. We have a couple of really good pipe stores in Charlotte, right? So I'm going to kind of take them out of the equation. There's a place called McCraney's in Charlotte. They're really known for their pipes. More than they have a cigar or humidor, a good one, but they're known for their pipes. But I'm talking about ones that maybe they just don't do pipes on a regular basis. And this is what I see happen. This is the pattern that I see happen. I think you're 100% right what you say, but this is what happens. They have like a pipe night. And they get a lot of interest, right? And I'll be honest, I learned about pipes through going to a pipe night. And I only smoke a pipe maybe a few times a year.
Right.
I'm not really big into it. It's just not my thing. But I see basically they'll sell some pipes that night. Maybe they'll sell some pipe tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it just dies off.
Right.
And I don't know if they've kind of gained anything from it. I don't see a lot of company retailers. Again, if they're not primarily pipe retailers, I don't see them push this after, and I see this kind of die out afterwards is what happened.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a cigar-centric shop become a pipe shop yet. It's like if there's one from the beginning and that's what they're known for, they're out, but that's kind of where I see it. So I kind of see it sometimes as more of a miss in the end. And I don't know how much money they make on the pipe night. You know, maybe on the on this. I think on this pipe tobacco, I don't think you make much on.
Right.
Pipes in general, I think that's where they make the money.
Sure.
I do see at the trade show pipes, like when I don't know if you know the retailers who do pipes, the pipe booths are very crowded the first day.
Yeah, the first day people are looking for that one pipe that they want to have, or things like that. So
yeah,
it's definitely a big draw.
Yeah, but do you smoke a pipe at all or no?
I'm about the same as you. I'll break it out a few times a year. You know, I love the smell of pipe tobacco. I love the smell of smoke from the pipe. It's just, I know people that smoke it all the time will tell you that it's not a lot of work, but it's a fair amount of work. You know, it's a little bit of babysitting and stuff like that. Really easy to get tongue bite if you're not doing it, you know, on the regular. So, it's a bit of a curiosity, I guess, but it's not like a in-depth thing that I get into. But I would much rather sit in a lounge with everybody smoking pipes than in a lounge if everybody's smoking cigars for the aroma of the room.
Yeah. And I have to, he's already chatting in the chat room. Big Scott's the guy who introduced me to pipes.
Okay.
So he did a great job at pipe night. He used to do a really good job at pipe night, and he was a guy who would push the pipes afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was really good. And the shop he worked at was Outland. And then there was a members lounge, and he would have a lot of that residual pipe smoking in there afterwards. So he did a really good job with it. And so he wasn't one of the guys I'm talking about with this. He would really get behind it. He loved his pipes.
Yeah.
He kind of taught me the basics too.
Nice.
So, I got to give him credit on that. All right. Here's the next one. Ladies nights. What are your opinion on ladies nights?
I would kind of put it in the same kind of group as the pipe night. if you don't have a large number of ladies that have interest, it's going to be probably not the best. And then you have to determine how it's laid out. Is it ladies only so that, you know, guys are not welcome kind of a thing? Or if it's a mix, if you have a bunch of guys and you have two ladies, they're going to feel like they're a little intimidated, I think, or the guys are just going to be overbearing, trying to talk to them, or, you know, try to, you know, tutor them on cigars and things like that. So, I think it depends on how it's kind of presented and, how the event, goes.
I agree. I think the other thing that happens, and this is where I've seen it work well, and I agree, most cases it's tough to get it to work well, is if you have a group of lady cigar smokers, if you build a community out of it. David Jones, friend of the show, he used to work at Burns Tobacco. They did an incredible job building up their lady. They had a lady cigar smokers group out of Chattanooga. I think they're still there. These are hardcore cigar smokers. Right. But you have to try to build that community up with there right now. And that's where it gets difficult. And I know a lot of the member lounges that I've seen in North Carolina, because they're private, they can exclude women.
Sure.
And that's a and it's always been controversial about letting women into the lounge, because on one hand, people don't want women. There's a group of people that don't want women there.
Right.
Want to get away from their wives.
Yep.
And then there's the other group of some of the younger guys who want women there. And, you know, and it changes the whole vibe of it as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of it as just trying to be a cigar smoker community, and it should be pretty much welcoming to everyone. Right.
Yeah.
There's nothing that says that, you know, women don't know about cigars and they can't smoke cigars and things like that. I understand some of the aspect of, you know, you want to kind of, you know, private lounge, kind of a guy's night kind of a thing. I can understand those types of things if you want to do it like that, but to be completely unwelcoming to women smokers, I think is, you know, the wrong way to do it.
Yeah. We had this guy, he just passed away recently. This guy, Bill, 90-year-old person, at the store, the shop I smoke at now, some ladies came in, and he just shot his mouth off like, I should be home making dinner and stuff. My goodness, it was bad. It was, and he's 90 years old. And lucky the women who did this recognized he was 90 years old.
Right.
But we the owner wasn't there, and we actually did tell the owner, hey, you know, he did make a bunch of people feel uncomfortable that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a public lounge, they have every right to be in there as much as I do. Mm-hmm. The private club thing, I get. That's a different angle, and that's a debatable thing for sure. But, yeah. But I have seen it. Like I said, the Chattanooga group is probably the most – I think there's one in Wisconsin that's pretty big, too, as far as lady smokers go. Yeah. Charlotte's got a really good – Charlotte's got a really passionate community of women smokers that's been building over the past few years. And Scott probably doesn't even notice because he's not in Charlotte anymore. It's the landscape's changed a lot right now. There's a really, we were talking to last week when we were talking to Kevin and Juan, their rep was one of those smokers.
Okay.
And she's a rep for them. So, like I said, so there's a really, like Charlotte, it took a while for it to build. And I think it kind of built outside the retailer community, to be honest with you. I think it just happened.
Right.
Social media and people getting together.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So you're launching a cigar, okay, at an event. And I want to kind of go through a couple of scenarios. Do you think it's good to bring some sort of exclusive cigar for that event, right? That maybe – I'm not talking about an event-only cigar, but a cigar that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Right.
Or do you think that it's better to – do a true national launch at a cigar, kind of what Abe did tonight with the Crema de la Laranja. First time launching it. What do you think? It's just overrated in general.
I mean, I think if the brand and the retailer have a synergy and they feel like it's a good move to kind of do that as a unique one-off thing, I think it can work. But there's some times where maybe that retailer can't push the brand hard enough for a launch for what the brand was looking to do. And it could definitely be a detriment because, you know, you get this cigar launched through this one retailer, you can't get it from them, they don't ship, something like that. You know, it can definitely be a bit of a wet blanket over a launch, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The problem is I've seen like some of these national launches aren't really national launches. Like the cigar's already out. Like, and that used to happen at the Cigar Dave events in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Like they promote this thing as, hey, this is the national debut of this cigar.
Right.
And it never was the case. The cigar maybe was debuting for the retailer sponsoring Cigar Dave.
Right.
And it maybe was broadcast on the radio, but it really wasn't a national launch there.
Yeah.
I can say that Stace Berklin, you know, I think you know him. We've actually taken road trips for some true national launches though.
Right.
The one I remember in particular that we did was we went to Burns because La Serena was launching a new cigar there, the Merlion. And that was a true national launch. I mean, that thing was an early release. If you got there, you know, you were going to be able to get that cigar. And like we drove 6 hours to go there because we were big La Serena fans. And, you know, it doesn't – and it was – actually, they do great events at Burns. And that was where I first met Dave, actually, was that
right?
So those, I think, were that I kind of miss some of that. I don't think you see as much of that anymore. Sure. I don't think people take road trips as much anymore. I think the launches are just different with that.
Yeah.
Right. I'll agree with you on that one. Okay. Next one. You have a members lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And the lounge wants to have a member-sponsored event.
Right.
Where they want members to kind of make the event happen, like a potluck dinner, movie night.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Should the members be doing that, or should that maybe be the store doing that?
This goes again to the members, but I think it could be pretty cool if you do a members driven event, especially if you want to do a potluck or something like that. A lot of cigar smokers I know are very much into barbecue, smoking, eats, all that kind of stuff. So if you do something like that where you're, everybody's kind of preparing something and bringing it in, you get to try a lot of different stuff. I think that could be fun. If you want to do a movie night, getting everybody to agree on a movie or whatever might be a little tough challenge or something like that. But I could see how it would be, if the members are, kind of have that community feel to it, I think it could be done pretty well. And I don't think, I understand that, the retailer would normally be putting on an event, but yeah, if you've got a nice group of people, then I don't see any reason why you couldn't do something like that.
No, I agree with that. And Big Scott's in the room again. And a couple of the ones he was involved with were really good. There was an Italian night where mm-hmm. they convinced one of the members' wives to cook all the food, and we contributed mm-hmm. money to it.
Mm-hmm.
The owner actually stepped up and got some of the reps to give us cigars that night.
There you go.
That was a great thing to do. He did that. So we had cigars to smoke that night.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. I know we did the same thing with Godfather. We did Godfather movie. We did Clint Eastwood night, kind of the same thing. And, I like it when at least the owner steps in and kind of, you should clear it with the owner. I mean, it's always
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the second thing is I like when the owner kind of puts a stake in it, saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to support it here that night. He was always looking for more sales this particular one too, but that's every retailer is going to do that. So, I always thought those were, I think they're good things as well. There's certain lounges I don't think it would work well in.
Mm-hmm.
Like one that comes to mind is Havana Phil's Davidoff Lounge. I don't think you can do that there. It's a different vibe is what I'll say, but in a more intimate lounge, I think it works.
Yeah, and if you have a lounge that doesn't have a bar, if you did a bottle sharing or a kind of a tasting type of thing with various liquor and stuff like that, that would be a good thing as well. If you've got a group of people that are into that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. Yeah, too. I mean, yeah, people would. You could bring your own. It's BYOB in the lounges, in the private lounges in Charlotte too. So you could do that as well. So yeah. I think they also would sometimes bring in liquor sponsors too to the old Outland.
Yeah.
To do that. Yeah. So I agree with you on that one. They were fun things. That's some of the ones that those are things I miss. Mm-hmm. I do miss those types of events. They were really good.
Yeah.
All right. Now here's a controversial one. You're a member of a cigar lounge.
Yep.
You're a paying member, but you have to pay a ticket for an event that night in your lounge.
I think that's okay. If it's for special events, there's some around here that do Halloween parties or Christmas parties and things like that. And those will be ticketed events. And depending on these lounges typically have different tiers for membership and things like that. So, if you're at the top tier, you might get a free ticket, and only have to pay if you wanted to bring a guest. Or if you were next tier down, you paid, half price for a ticket or something like that. And so if they want to do something like that and there's, unique things that the event is going to bring, food or additional cigars or whatever, I could see how it can work. I don't think that just because you're a member, you're you get everything for free kind of a thing, when they do have an event. So I think it's okay to have special ticketed events.
That's a controversial one here, and it really comes down to the price point of the membership.
Right. Sure.
There are some membership lounges where you are paying hundreds of dollars. And then there was a ticketed event. And basically, if you wanted to be in the lounge that night, you had to have a ticket, whether you wanted to be part of the event or not.
Sure.
That's where it's got now. I've seen it when you look at the membership agreements, right? Mm-hmm. If you read the fine print in a lot of them, it will say they can do that.
Yeah, but if that's already in the agreement that you signed up for, and right. your membership says that there are going to be X number of nights during the year that you don't have free reign over the lounge because there will be private events that you can participate in at an additional cost, I don't see anything wrong with it.
Yeah. Now, Alan Rubin made a good point. If the ticket comes with a cigar and a drink, there's something about that that's good. I think the hybrid way to do that is basically don't kick anyone out that night. But if you want the amenities of the event, buy the ticket. And I think I've seen a lot of lounges do that. And I think that's that. You know, this way the member's not excluded that night. I think it's okay in that case. Mm-hmm. And I think like Aaron goes up to Havana Phil's, like that's how they've worked their events. I think that's a good way to do it as well. Yeah. You buy the ticket and then you go cash you take your ticket, it gets you the drink, it gets you the cigar, and I'm okay with it like that. Some of the smaller, more intimate lounges, this has been a problem. It's definitely been a problem. Especially Super Bowl is always a controversial one. When it's ticketed for the Super Bowl, that's
yeah. But like I said, you have to offer something above and beyond. I think to ask for additional money,
right? But then you know, can you? Yeah, but yeah. But when you say the only way you could be in the lounge, you're paying an additional $50 for that night. And a lot of
if it's set up that way up front, then I think it's okay. But if there's nothing in the agreement and all that stuff, and you pretty much you know you have access during business hours as a member. Then there could be a problem.
Yeah, like I said, this was a problem with our old lounge that Scott used to work at. It was a huge problem because it was kind of forced down is what happened, and it was a problem. Well, Scott's gonna think I'm doing a retrospective. Here's the next one, and this is an interesting one: allowing non-members in a cigar lounge and I'm gonna change this in any case, cigar event or non-cigar event. What are your feelings about non-members being in the lounge?
So if it's not for an event, if the lounge is a perk of being a paid member, and you're letting someone in that doesn't pay, and it's just kind of a regular day or whatever it is, I can see why you would have an issue with it because you're paying for access to it, and somebody that doesn't pay for access to it is there. Now, if the shop wants to do a few of these events every year where they have kind of allowing non-members in so they can get a chance to see what the lounge is like, to see if they can recruit new members, that's cool. I think that's a good, obviously it's good for the lounge's business to try to increase membership, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's okay to do that. But I don't think you want to have it on a regular basis because then you may be eliminating some of the reasons for becoming a member in the first place. If the other perks aren't good enough to make you think that there's value in the membership. For events, I'd be okay with it, but I think you have to set it up the right way. If there's a limited amount of whatever it is for the event there, I think you have to give members first shot. Because if there's a limited amount, you don't want a bunch of non-members rolling through and kind of, you know, poaching everything that's there for it. And the members kind of get left holding the bag without getting a shot to buy what they wanted. So I think if they get first shot at that stuff, then it's okay. And then non-members, if there's stuff left over, non-members, have kind of free reign to purchase whatever's remaining.
Yeah, I like the option of a day pass as long as it's a reasonable price thing. Like, sure. Don't gouge it. If it's reasonable, hey, you buy this cigar and for an extra few dollars, you get a ticket into the lounge for that night.
Or if you buy X amount of dollars, you get free entrance kind of thing.
Yeah. You get free. It shows it off. I think with an event, I've seen it work well. Where I remember when Manuel Quesada came for a Manuel Casa Magna event, and everyone came to see Manuel. They opened the lounge up that night, and they recruited a ton of members after that.
Yeah.
So it does do it. I think when you get someone who's the issue is sometimes you bring a guest. It's the issue. Can you bring a guest?
Right.
And that's where it gets a little sticky. Cause then if you're bringing the guest all the time, there's gotta be a point where you say, you can't bring this guest. Like you can't bring your son in every time. Like if your son's coming in every time as a guest,
yeah, yeah.
you got to buy them, you know. So I think you got to, there's got to be some discretion used by the owner of the store with that.
Right.
I've seen that happen. Mark Boley, I think you may remember, he's a guy who worked at the cigar shop. We had him on a Terrence show years ago. Mm-hmm. He had a really unique concept he came up with in Myrtle Beach, which is a very transient type of community, right? And he set up a locker program, right, for people. Like you could rent a locker for a week, and it gave you access to his lounge.
There you go.
It was very reasonable. It was like, I think it was $50 for the week. And, you know, you could keep your cigars there. You could come and go as any member. And he got a lot of business that way. They had a few lockers that they would put aside, you know, to just basically you rent it. If you didn't want the locker, I guess it was the same thing. You got like a week pass or something like that.
Yeah.
Because that community was really good with that.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Now, a lot of these lounges, what they do is if you buy a tier of membership, they will give you cigars each month in your locker.
Sure.
And the thing is, I've seen it where it's done two ways. I've seen it where the retailer will put some cigars from his inventory in the lockers. Then I see him basically put the IPCPR cigars in that he's not going to bring in. and get free stuff from the reps. Again, probably the idea you're not going to bring it in. Good thing or bad thing? I have mixed feelings on that one too. I think there's some benefits with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's okay. If the membership kind of leads to, you know, each month you're going to get X number of cigars put in your locker, that's cool. I mean, it's part of the membership. So that's no problem. If it's cigars that are not carried in the lounge, however the lounge owner acquires them is fair game. If it's a way to kind of check the temperature of the membership in regards to those cigars to determine if he wants to bring them in or not, absolutely. Use that as your kind of like polling situation for doing that. If it's free cigars on the trade show, again, it's, you know, maybe just a perk of membership. Maybe there's certain guys that are friends with the owner and that's one of the things they do. That's cool too. I mean, I think we've talked to, definitely Sokka said it and many others have said it, I think, is if they don't want to give out cigars for free, they can say no. So they don't, you know, they're not tied to giving out free cigars to people. So they can do it. And I think once it's changed hands and it's in the owner's hands, you can do what you want with them.
Here's what I would go with that. I would say if you're going to do it, even if you're not carrying the brand, and even if it's a trade show sample, like obviously disclose that. But bring in something, maybe do it where get the members to smoke it and see if maybe it has something you should carry. I mean, use it to your advantage, I would say, with that. Yeah. But put a cigar in there that you at least maybe smoked before and like is you think your members are going to like. The problem is I've seen some shops put some really shitty cigars in there. Like unbanded, fresh rolled, like, you know, put something in there. I think, like I said, try to use it to your advantage to build a business and maybe someone's going to get hooked on the cigar and they'll carry it in the humidor at some point, you know?
Yep.
So I don't think it's a bad thing. I would just say, do it right. Don't cheapen it. You know, if you're going to do it, like say, you know what, you'll get $50 of cigars and these are what these cigars retail for.
Right.
You know, I would also try to put something that maybe is, I'm not saying don't put an unknown brand in there, but put something in that maybe has some legs, you know, in there too.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a line that, maybe it's a brand you carry and it's a line you don't carry, something like that. But I've seen some real dog rockets put in there for the sake, like there was no way these cigars were going to be liked by anyone. It was just kind of like, I gotta put that in there.
Yeah, you don't want to just put filler cigars kind of in there as something as a, you know, you think you're giving it as a perk, but the members don't see it that way.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Number 8. This is my favorite one. Multiple TVs in a lounge that all have the same sport on it. The same thing.
So the same game or just like 4 TVs, 4 baseball, 4 different baseball games?
Let's go the same thing, like golf.
Okay.
Like NASCAR. Because I think there's something with football. It's a different story in baseball. It's a different, when you have different ones, I think that's different.
Yeah. I think it's okay. If somebody makes a request for something different,
right.
I think it's okay. I think where you kind of get tied in is, hey, Joe Blow's chair faces this TV, and he wants to watch that. And then you have to kind of deal with how the lounge deals with something like that. But I don't think it's necessarily fair to have, you know, kind of dominate the lounge with a single event. If you have people that are interested in some different stuff, you know, if all your regulars are in there to watch the golf tournament and they want the sound on for the golf tournament, let that be the dominant TV with the sound.
Right.
But let somebody else watch the baseball game or watch the horse race or whatever it is with the sound off, and, you know, give them the opportunity to be into something that they're into. I don't think you want to try to turn anyone away from enjoying their time in the lounge if you can help it.
I agree. Now, I got in a little trouble with this because we would in the lounge watch football on Sundays. Mm-hmm. Now, the main TV is going to be the Panthers. That's the home team. Most of the people are fans mm-hmm. there, especially when their season ticket holders, they watch the road game there. I'm not going to win that one. But I'd always needle that second TV for the Giant game.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, after a while, I had a couple people say, hey,
right.
Enough's enough. Yeah. So I kind of got a little call, and I understood. I said, no, you're right. Yeah. You know, it's like, I said, especially when the Giants started really sucking, it became a little more of an issue. So, mm-hmm. so what I've said, I think what we used to do with that, and even still though, is if someone's not, what we say is you put the game on, maybe someone's watching, but if a few people come in and say, hey, do you want to watch this game, or you want to switch it off to something? I think that's kind of like, it's kind of like a gentlemanly thing to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now with seats, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Because people like, I'm guilty of having a regular seat, right?
Right.
But some people are really protective of that seat.
Yeah.
Okay. There were some members, I remember Super Bowl games, they were coming in like at 10 in the morning, putting their stuff there, leaving for 4 hours and coming. That's stuff you don't do,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That was a problem. That was a big problem with people you wouldn't expect to do that, right? So, again, you know, if I know someone's there, you know, and I'm in that seat, hey, you want the seat? I know it's in, you know, again, just kind of use common sense there. But that meant, I tell you, some people run the lounges take a lot of shit with that, too. It's a
special yeah, I guess in that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the last one, and this is, I'll call this the Dave Garofalo question, because mm-hmm. I've heard him address this one. Allowing cigars in a lounge that are not purchased at that store. Maybe not, I'm not saying they don't carry it, but not purchased. So it could be a cigar they carry, but it wasn't purchased there.
I would say it's up to the lounge's discretion. They have every right to tell you that you need to buy stuff there. And if those are the rules of the store, you got to follow the rules of the store. It's not your store. It's the owner's store. So
yeah.
If they say you have to buy it there, that's the rules, man. Right. You just got to follow the rules.
Yeah.
But if they're open to it and, you know, you buy a couple cigars there, but you choose to put them away and you bring out some cigars that you brought and the lounge is okay with that, free game. I think you have to just go based on the rules of the lounge.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Dave takes the approach. Dave's rule is no, but that's Dave's rule.
Right.
That's Dave's rule. Now, yep. If some owner wants to say, don't bring the cigars in, you know, it has to be cigars we carry at least. That or hey, we want you to purchase those cigars there. Mm-hmm. For example, this is where I've seen it get a little, like. I've seen Ezra Zion cigars being smoked in a retail store, you know, right. Like it's, you know, some of the goofy stuff. And that's where I just say, that's a little too much. Cause those are direct to consumer for the most part. That yeah. It's just, it's not cool to do that, but I think that's up to the lounge owner, set what the rule is. And I mean, there was one guy in Charlotte, this guy was nuts. He would pull things out of the locker of people.
That's not good.
That's really bad. I mean,
yeah.
I can understand not smoking a Cuban cigar in there. I can, mm-hmm. but I think it's up to the lounge owner. And if you're going to be the guy to pull the cigars out of a locker, then put that in your membership agreement. You know, hey, we'll audit your locker. You're at risk there. I don't think it's a good thing to do. I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah, I mean, if the lounge is really easygoing about it, I think that etiquette is pretty much just, you know, kind of buy like for like for what you're going to be smoking there. So if you plan to smoke two cigars in the lounge and you brought two cigars with you, buy two cigars. Just kind of, you know, that's, I think that's the right thing to do. You know, they're not there just for a free place for you to sit and smoke. You know, they have to keep the lights on and pay the employees and all that stuff. So, I think that's just the proper etiquette in regards to if they're leaning towards that type of thing.
Yeah. Or if you buy a box, like, I don't have a problem if you buy the box, put the box in your locker, you bought the box at that store.
Yeah.
Again, I wouldn't feel right about bringing a CI box in there. It feels wrong. Now, I'm guilty. I've had shops let me smoke samples from time to time in there. I try not to abuse it.
Right.
I've started to get away from it more because I can't really review it there anyway, but sometimes I will do that. But that causes a problem because then people are going to ask what you're smoking and stuff, and it's putting the retailer in a bad position. So I've tried to get away from that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fair to even though it's private and they didn't have a rule against it, I don't want to put anyone in a bad position. And as far as Dave's position, I respect Dave's position. That's Dave's choice to do that. If that's his rule, then you follow the rule. I'll smoke somewhere else. You know, respect. It's going into someone's home and respecting it.
Yep, exactly.
All right. So those were the things I had.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Kind of wrapping up. Next week, Dylan Austin, the president of Davidoff Cigars, will be our special guest.
Nice.
Primetime episode 157.
Yep.
So that's going to be a very interesting interview. So I've never interviewed Dylan before. So I think it's going to be a good show. So I think stay tuned for that one. And then the week after, we're still kind of – we have some stuff filled in October already, but next week, the week after, we're still trying to fill that up right now.
Yep.
All right. Anything else, Aaron?
Nope. I think we're all set.
All right. Thanks to our audience for tuning in, as always. Do appreciate it. Thanks to Santana Diaz, our special guest as well. And that's going to wrap up Primetime episode 156 into the annals of history for this Thursday, September 17th. Now Friday, September 18th on the East Coast. And if Cigar Coop publishes today, we will have our 3,000th consecutive day of publishing. I got to hope that article.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I hope that article makes it out. So I don't want to jinx it. So, but we haven't hit this. So it's a $29.99 today. So there we go. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see everybody next week.
See you guys.